My name's Chris. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 5th, 1987, and my home group is the West Portland Group. I am, it's an honor and pleasure or privilege to do this. I want to thank the committee for inviting me to do this and allowing me to be of service and participate in my own recovery. Larry just knocked it out of the park. I mean, he was awesome, and I'm just so grateful I get to follow him. He did great, and it's kind of he got everybody up, and now I'm going to come in and talk about a life and death errand and bring everybody back down before lunch. So, and that's what the Big Book refers to in this process of the fourth and fifth step is a life and death errand. And I want to give you a little bit of background on me before I get into the fourth and fifth step. You know, some of the speakers talked about freedom, and they talked about the freedom from the obsession to drink, and they talked about a freedom from self. And I'm here to report that when I came in and I surrendered in Alcoholics Anonymous and I did steps 1, 2, and 3, I went from somebody that lived with an obsession to drink alcohol on a daily basis to somebody that was freed of that obsession. But I wasn't freed from the bondage of self yet, from those first three steps. I was temporarily, but not permanently. And I'll get to that in a little bit. So just a little bit about my background and where I came from. I'm somebody that when I wasn't drinking, you know, the Big Book describes it as being restless, irritable, and discontent. And I got to say that that's like a colossal understatement in my case. It's putting it very, very mildly. In the doctor's opinion, it talks about several descriptions of different types of alcoholics, that there's this one that's a sociopath, and there's one that's always going on the water wagon, and there's a guy that, you know, won't admit that he can't take a drink, and there's the guy that is the manic depressant, which a whole chapter could be written about. And then the last description is this one that he's an alcoholic that's normal in all respects except for his reaction to alcohol. He's often an able, intelligent person. I identify with every one of those descriptions except for that last one. I was anything but normal in every respect. I was, frankly, quite the opposite. I identify more with that being the outright mental defective and full flight from reality, and there's one other that they describe. See, when I wasn't drinking, I was just uncomfortable in my own skin. I was somebody that I felt alienated from everybody on the planet. I felt this sense of isolation. It was as if there was everybody in the world and me. And as Bill Wilson described, he said that there was a seemed to be a barrier between me and everybody else. I was somebody that had anxiety when there wasn't any reason, any catalyst to have any sort of anxiety. I was somebody that had problems with depression when there wasn't anything to really have any catalyst for depression. I was just uncomfortable. I had this sense of impending doom, and as my disease progressed, it became a sense of impending insanity. My mantra was, when I was sober, or, you know, as not drinking, was there's something really wrong with me. I know I drink a lot. There's no question about that, but there's something really wrong with me. And alcohol solved that for me. A certain amount of alcohol, when I ingest alcohol into my system, my shoulders would come down, my head would slow down and stop racing, I could take a deep breath, and I was okay. And it was the only time in my life that I was okay. Now, I described that, this anxiety and all that as insanity. I thought I was insane. I found later in Alcoholics Anonymous that they described it as self-centeredness. It was self-obsession. It was just manifestations of self. Me turned inward looking so much at me that would bubble up symptomatically in this anxiety and in this depression and this sense of being different than other people. And alcohol was magic to me. My drinking career only lasted for about 11 years. And in those 11 years, I was arrested 15 or 16 different times for alcohol-related offenses. Ended up with 3 DUIs, went to a couple treatment centers, was detoxed for alcohol. I went to detoxes for alcohol withdrawal, was hospitalized for alcohol withdrawal. I was somebody that was a daily drinker the majority of my drinking career, and ultimately ended up becoming a daily oblivion drinker. My last couple years of drinking were, it was like Groundhog Day. Day after day, it was the same thing. I desperately didn't want to drink. I knew that it was killing me. And I would come to every morning full of guilt, shame, and remorse from the night before, patch together the blackout from the night before, and swear, this is it. I'm not doing it again. It's killing me. Only till a little bit later in the day, the obsession would kick in, and this time's going to be different. Here's how. And I'd drink again. And I did it day in and day out. Finally, what happened to me is on February 4th of 1987, I went out one more time to try to control and enjoy my drinking, which was definitely my great obsession because alcohol worked so well in my life. And I went out, and my plan was as I was going to drink 10 drinks that night, and I was going to shut it down early, 10, 11 o'clock, 10 drinks, because 8 to 10 drinks was my magic number. 8 to 10 drinks made me feel like what I thought everybody else felt like normally. It allowed me to get out and participate in life. And had I been somebody that was able to drink those 8 to 10 drinks and then maintain what those 8 to 10 drinks did for me without going overboard, I'd be out there drinking my 8 to 10 drinks right now. But because of the phenomenon of craving, I was never able to do that, and the loss of control and a drink to oblivion and suffer consequences and so forth. Anyway, on February 4th, I went out. I had a plan, 10 drinks, going to shut it off early, come home, go to bed, get a good night's sleep, and the next day be like a regular civilian. And the guy that was supposed to pick me up to take me down to the bars to go drink was running late, and I'd bought a 12-pack of beer for us to drink on the way down to the bars. He was running late. I drank 9 of them sitting in my living room before he came to pick me up to go drink my 10 drinks. And so I pretty much blew my plan before I left even for the bars. I went to the bars, normal night of drinking. I remember drinking vodka Collins at one point. I remember the both bars that I was in that I recall anyway. I secured a job as a bartender that night only to be cut off by the same guy that had given me the job, so I assaulted him and my new employer, and had the police called on me one more time, found myself running through people's backyards trying to evade the police, was arrested, and something happened this night that was different than any other night, because I'd been in significantly more trouble than this particular night, but something just broke inside me, and I don't know how to articulate or explain that, but something broke. And before they booked me, I recognized that. I was kind of in and out of a blackout at this time, and they took me down. They booked me and ended up taking me home at the end of the evening. My last conscious thought that night was, something's different about tonight, and I wonder if it'll be that way in the morning. And when I came to, it was February 5th, 1987, and it was different. Something had happened. And what was different was I was completely defeated by alcohol and by alcoholism. I was completely defeated, and I surrendered. At that moment, death was a more attractive alternative than to continue living the way I was living. Had I had a crystal ball that morning that I could have looked into, and it just said, if you just drink for another 6 months, you'd be dead, I would have just drank another 6 months. I wasn't afraid of dying. What I was afraid of is I was going to keep on living, and I was going to keep spiraling further and further down this miserable existence of a life that I'd been living. And in that moment of desperation, I cried out to a God that I didn't believe in, and I asked God to either make this stop or to kill me. And I didn't know this at the time, but what happened is willingness was born. I didn't achieve willingness, it was just grace. And the willingness was to come to Alcoholics Anonymous and do what you guys did, even though it didn't make sense to me. The other thing that I didn't know that had happened was that the obsession to drink alcohol was removed. And I didn't know that at the time, I only knew that in hindsight. but the obsession. I went from, on February 4th, 1987, I was somebody that lived with an obsession to drink alcohol on a daily basis, and on February 5th, 1987, I was completely freed of that obsession. I started into Alcoholics Anonymous, my journey. I started doing everything they told me to do. I went to the 90 meetings in 90 days. I started reading the Big Book on a daily basis. I got a sponsor. I started working the steps. I started praying to a God that I didn't necessarily believe in. I started acting as if. I started taking actions as if I believed in that God. And I got through the first three steps. And something happened in my life that I started coming to believe in this power. And I believed in Alcoholics Anonymous because of what it had removed that obsession. And that's all I came here for. I didn't come for being comfortable in my own skin or anything else. I came purely for physical sobriety. And the reality is that if that's all I'd ever gotten from Alcoholics Anonymous was physical sobriety, I would have considered it an absolute bargain. However, I found that I got so much more than just physical sobriety. So anyway, I got through the first three steps, and I had a temporary relief of that bondage of self. And for the first time in my life started working out. All my life to this point, I was like a square peg trying to fit into a round hole, and it wouldn't work. And I failed in every department of my life. Everything I did, I failed in and caused havoc and trouble and despair to myself and to everybody around me. And for the first time, my life started working out. And I started believing in this Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started on my journey. But I didn't go into the fourth step. And it talks about, in the Big Book, it says, referring to the third step, it says, although this was a vital and crucial step, it could have a little permanent effect unless at once, which means rather soon, at once followed by this inventory process. And I didn't do it. I rested on my laurels on what I got out of those first three steps. And what happened was, little by little, that self took over again, that bondage of self. The obsession to drink didn't return at that point, but the self, me on me, came back. And little by little, the anxiety started seeping back into my life. The depression started seeping back into my life. The sense of being different and not belonging started coming back into my life. I started getting panic attacks. I was hospitalized in early sobriety from a panic attack. And I was hoping it was a heart attack because I knew what it really was insanity. I mean, it just proved to me, you know, my first sponsor that I got, I heard him say in a meeting, he said, I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy. And when he said that, I was like, I get that. Because alcohol, it seemed, preserved my sanity. And my great secret was that, yes, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm also insane. I'll admit to being an alcoholic, but I shouldn't be walking amongst earth people. I should be institutionalized. So I started down this slope of furthering into self and became more miserable and more miserable as time went on. And just to illustrate kind of my mindset, I enrolled in college when I got sober, and I'd been in college before. I spent about 2 years in college before sobriety, and actually achieved one college credit in 2 years. And that one college credit was called Student Volunteer Experience. And it's because I had dated the professor. So I decided to enroll in college for real, and I was taking a psychology class. And it was the professor of this college class was 2 or 3 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was a big auditorium class. And we were taking some sort of exam, self-administered and graded exam, and it had to do with how we process stress, similar to the MMPI, but much shorter. And so I took this exam and answered all the questions honestly because I was now in Alcoholics Anonymous and practicing that. And then we self-graded this class. And you know, I went through and I was honest on the grading. And at the end of the class, it was a big auditorium class, and this professor said, who here scored between 0 and 25 on this exam? And about maybe 10% of the class raised their hand. And he said, you people, don't really experience much stress. It's like water off a duck's back. Who here scored between 25 and 50? Majority of the class raised their hand. He said, you people don't have any significant stressors in your life. You process stress in a normal way. Who scored here between 50 and 75? About maybe 10% of the class raised their hand. And they said, you people have a significant stressor in your life, or you just don't process stress very well. You know, or you're going through something, maybe a divorce or a loss of somebody. And he said, who scored between 75 and 100? There was like one person, and that person obviously was going through something real traumatic. Anybody between 100 and 125? Nobody. Anybody score over 125? Nobody. Now, I sat there with my hand down. I had scored 146 on this exam, but I wasn't about to be the only one to raise my hand. And when he said when he saw that nobody responded to above 125, he said, I didn't think so, because usually people that score above 125 are either institutionalized or locked up in federal penitentiaries, which concerned me. One more time confirming that in addition to this alcoholism and drinking problem I have, I'm insane. And so after the class was over, I went down to him and I said to him, I said, Doctor, I've scored 146 on this exam. Now, he was a member of my home group. And the home group that I belonged in did not leave it just to your sponsor to give you unsolicited advice. Your sponsor did that, but also it seemed like everybody else in the group did too. And I had been getting for months now, you better do your four step. If you don't do your four step, you're going to drink again. If you don't do your four step, you're going to die. Chris, have you done your four step yet? Over and over on a daily basis at these meetings. And this professor was a member of my home group. And so when I told him, I said, Doctor, I scored 146 on this exam. And he said, oh, Chris, he goes, anybody in their first year of sobriety would score over 125 on this exam. He goes, essentially what he said is, you suffer from untreated alcoholism. Do your fourth step. And I acknowledged that, and I thought, no, that can't be it. So I went along my way and continued to spiral down into this miserable existence. I was sleeping in a fetal position, saying the Lord's Prayer over and over again, knowing that I was going to be locked up at any time. My secret would be out. I was going to snap. And finally, in a moment of despair, I called a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I called him up, and I said, I'm riddled with anxiety. I'm terrified. I'm miserable. I can't live like this any longer. And what I'm about to say is just purely my experience. It's not an opinion. It's not an indictment against medication or anything else. It's just my experience. He said, Chris, he said, what you suffer from is beyond alcoholism. He goes, what you need to do is you need to go see this doctor so-and-so and get on some medication. They have some really good medication that will take care of this stuff now. And this was in 1987, and this is right when they had found out that they'd scratched Librium but found that Valium, alcoholism was caused by a Valium deficiency. And so he said they have some really good medication that will take care of this. And when he said that to me, my heart sunk. It's like, God, I thought I had a solution here. You know, I'd been in Alcoholics Anonymous and I'd been listening to these people. I'd read the bedevilments, the bedevilment where, people were prey to misery and despair, that they couldn't control their emotional natures, that these people had overcome all this, self-centered neurosis in their lives, this ism, so to speak. And here's somebody in AA, with more time, me telling me that I need to go anesthetize my emotions one more time. I've been doing that all my life. All my life, I've been afraid of my own emotions and trying to anesthetize them so I don't have to feel them and experience them. And so when he said that, my heart just sunk. And I was like, I hit another bottom. And I made the decision then. I said, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to take any medication. Either this Alcoholics Anonymous thing really works or it doesn't. Either God is everything or he isn't. I'm going to do the remainder of the steps 4 through 12, exactly as they're outlined in the big book. And if I get to step 12 and I still feel this way, then I'll commit suicide. But I'm not going to take the medication. And so I started on my journey in the fourth step. And what my sponsor had me do is he started by having me write a life story. And I know that to some people that sounds sacrilege, that you're supposed to do, you know, certain columns and a certain color ink and everything. And that's not what I did. What I did is I wrote a gigantic life story. And in addition to that, I wrote a resentment list. And in that resentment list, I had four columns. It was very, very general, very vague. It was not real specific, it was the worst piece of writing. It was the worst inventory I've written in Alcoholics Anonymous. Since then, I've written some great inventories, perfect columns, the fourth column just right on, you know, where it's supposed to be, but not this one. This one is a big, gigantic mess, a combination of a life story, resentments with the columns, the fears, the sex inventory, and just it was a gigantic mess. Worst thing structurally I've written, but I got to tell you, to this date, it's the best thing I've ever written in Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's where I got my freedom. You know, my freedom came somewhere after steps 4 and 5. And so I wrote this thing, and I got into, it was emphasized over and over, and it says it in the big book. It says that the only thing that counts, I think it's thoroughness and honesty, I believe that's what it says, but something along those lines, thoroughness and honesty, and that's what this was. It was thorough and it was honest. And I wrote this inventory, and I'm not going to go into detail on how to write an inventory. My topic's steps 4 and 5. I'm just sharing simply my experience with 4 and 5. The instructions are pretty clear in the big book. And I wrote this thing, and I got it together, and not believing that this was going to work. I didn't believe this was going to work. I just did it because I didn't have any other alternatives. And I got together with my sponsor to read this fifth step, and we sat down, and he did something for me that was absolutely magical, and it's something that I do whenever I listen to somebody else's inventory, and that is he started by telling me some of his story and his deep, dark secrets. And I know our book talks about that it's okay to use clergy, that is okay based on our literature. For me, it was very important to do it with another member of Alcoholics Anonymous because of that identification, because of that unity. One alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic, oh, I've done that too. Oh, I've done that too. And so when he started and he shared his deep, dark secrets with me, it just was like a weight came off my shoulders. And it was like, oh, my God, I'm not alone. You know, the 12 and 12 talks about in the fifth step, it says that it doesn't say that it's the end of isolation. And this is important for me. It says it's the end of that sense of isolation, because that's what I had, was this sense of isolation. I never really was isolated. I just had a sense of isolation. And that the fifth step is this end of this sense of isolation. And it also talks about it being the end of this anxious apartness that we all suffer. And through him sharing his stuff with me, there was the beginning of that. And I sat down and I read everything. And I laid it all out. Every nook and cranny. I was thorough. I gave him everything. I held nothing back at all. And what happened was I got to probably about two-thirds of the way through that fifth step, and we took a break, and I went to the restroom, to use the restroom, and one of the things that I'd gotten in the habit of doing is whenever I was in a restroom, I would get trapped in the reflective surface of the mirror for a while, and what I would do is I would judge myself. And I would judge myself based on something that was happening inside my soul. It wasn't an intellectual exercise, but it was something that happened deep down internally inside me. And I would look at myself in the mirror and I'd start off like, this is what's wrong with me. This is what's wrong with me. You know, this is how I'm wrong. This is how I'm bad. This is my shortcoming. This is how I don't measure up. This is how I don't fit in. This is why I'm not as good as everybody else on this world. And go on and on and on. And and then go about my miserable life after. And or occasionally I'd go to the mirror and I would be fulfilled with this kind of false pride and bravado. And I would look at myself in the mirror. I'd go, this is what's right with me. I'm great. This is this, you know. And I'd go for a little bit shorter than the other side. And then at the end of it, kind of my heart would sink down the pit of my stomach and go, I'm kind of a piece of garbage after all. And I did it every time I'd look in the mirror. Any time without drinking, I would do this. And so we took this break, and I went into the bathroom, and I went to the mirror to do what I normally did. And I sat there, and I looked at myself in the mirror, waiting for this thing to happen that always happens. And it didn't happen. And I sat there, and I started to be overcome by a sensation or a feeling. And I couldn't identify what that feeling was. And I remember thinking, what is this that I'm feeling? What is this that I'm feeling? And I looked at myself, and I was searching to try to describe what it was I was feeling. And then it dawned on me. It was comfort. I was comfortable in my own skin. And it was the first time that I'd ever been comfortable in my own skin without a certain amount of alcohol in my system. And that's been my reaction ever since then. Something happened to me somewhere between steps 5 and 6. And what it was, it's as if something inside of me shifted, and I have never been the same person since. You know, I've worked a solid program at times. I've worked a weak program at times since then. But I've never not been the person that I became after that inventory process. It absolutely changed my life. Up to that point, I'd been a believer in Alcoholics Anonymous in terms of that it'll keep me from drinking. And as I mentioned, if that's all it was enough. You know, it was enough until it wasn't enough. And but that's where I became a believer in Alcoholics Anonymous as a design for living. And it talks about on page 75 in our book, and I didn't even know this was in here at the time, and I'm going to read it. Real quick, it says, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And a little further down the page, it says that, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. And that's what I became through this process, was a free man at last. And I was going to close with that, but I don't even know I'm okay on time, but I'm real short on time. I changed what I was going to talk about this morning so many times. I went to, oh my God, it's only going to take me about 20 minutes to say all that. And then to the other side, I was like, I'll never be able to fit all that in within an hour. So, but nobody minds quitting early. I am going to end with that. I'm a free man at last, and it's a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Chris. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for my sobriety.